Jason won that match against Shane, and Shane's a king, and he went up and stood in his chair. You don't stand in the king's chair.
Rob, guess what today is?
Today is the day before New Year's Eve.
It is that. It definitely is that. It's also the...
And 2 weeks away from when you're going to get married, right?
Don't remind me. I'm still trying to forget. But it is also...
How many days till you get married?
I don't know what you're talking about. I forget. Oh, 24, I guess. I'll be real. 24 days.
Oh, a long time. 3 weeks.
Yeah, plenty of time. Today is the very first Wisconsin-only podcast we're going to do. How exciting is that?
Well, I feel like I'm right at home.
All you people from Norway and Germany, you guys can just turn the podcast off right now because you're going to hate all of this. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I don't know because it's snowing, right? I'm looking out my back window right now and there's three, four inches of brand new sticky white stuff on everything. On all the trees. It's like a picture postcard.
Well, that's exciting.
So I think people from Germany can relate to that.
Yeah.
And what was the other country? Norway?
Norway and Finland and Sweden. I have lots of listeners from there.
Yes. The Norskies, yes. My name is Høyvik. My uncle and aunt Gudrun and Egil Høyvik.
I think I'm German. Seems like Mindum is German. I don't know.
Mindum is all German, 100% German.
Seems German. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding to all the people out there from not
beautiful
Wisconsin.
Country, Germany, though, isn't it?
There will still be some very valuable things in here, especially in the initial announcements. Maybe. I don't know. But you can listen anyways if you want. And if you don't, then, well, we're also going to be recording a national one today, so... You can listen to that one, and that'll be fun. But so, Rob, why don't we jump right in, and we will start out with some WSPA knowledge. And if you're not from Wisconsin, WSPA is a sponsor to the podcast, and it stands for Wisconsin State Pool Players Association. And it is basically an organization that runs a state tournament. So we don't have – we do have VNEA, which is Valley National Entertainment of America or something like that, I think. And we do have that in the state, and we also have ACS, but it's very small. We have BCA, it's very small. I should say BCAPL, it's very small. With WSPA is our big, big, big state tournament that we have every year. And the state tournament is coming up soon, and we will talk about this first because the deadlines for signing up for the event is fast approaching. It is January 17th, so... get your entry fees in if you're going to play as soon as possible, because after the 17th, you are going to have to add $20 per entry as a late fee all the way up until the 31st. And if you are signed up after the 31st, you do not get to play. And it seems like it's still a long ways off. It's, 2 weeks and a couple days. But if you don't get around and doing it, it's just going to creep up and it's going to suck. So
yeah,
get that entry fee in. Or don't, because that, like you pointed out last time, it's more money for them.
If you have a reason for having a late entry, it's probably not going to do you any good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they don't look at it case by case. It's either in or it's not. So
yeah, you're either in or you're out.
Yep. Yes, make sure that you get those in. And the WSPA state event this year is going to be Wednesday, February 26th, March 1st. So, fast approaching. I know it seems like a long ways out still, but then you blink and it's here. So,
downtown Appleton.
Yes, in the new arena in Appleton.
Right across the street from the old Sharks Club, is that?
That's what I heard.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, the new arena is supposed to be just huge, and it's going to be like the perfect venue for this going forward, which is kind of cool because the venues that we've had in the past, Olympia was always just great. I mean, Olympia was the best. It has the hotel attached. The only problem, it just wasn't big enough. As the event grew, you couldn't put more tables in there. So,
you think we'll, You think we'll get to see Timmy Ringer?
Oh, I don't know. He's your buddy, so talk to him. He shows up for a state pool tournament like once every 4 years, and then he wins it, and then doesn't show up for another 4 years. It's kind of weird how that happens.
Yeah, I don't think he ever plays.
And when he does, he just wins.
He just brings it to the tournament.
Yeah, it's crazy how that works out. So because it's all in one weekend this year, which is, I guess, one of the benefits of having all of this at the new convention center in Appleton, is they're doing it all in one weekend again, where the last few years they've had to do it in two because the venues weren't big enough to be able to basically hold the amount of tables needed. It's going to be all in one weekend, I'm not sure if they're offering less events. Let's see. They're offering the men's nine ball.
It gets done, but it's kind of an overlapping thing. Like, if there's always some players that are kind of not able to finish their final singles matches sometimes and play a team event at the same time, there's always a little of that happens. And that's the only downside of doing, the team and the scotch and the singles.
Yeah, you can't
nine
put
ball, eight ball, and 10 ball, or whatever, for all the different divisions, all in 5 days. It's a concise, well orchestrated mess.
Yeah, unfortunately, and that's one of the drawbacks is you can't put the team event on hold because four people are still in the singles event, so you kind of just wiggle your way in and play those whenever you can. Or wait until Sunday afternoon when everybody else is done. That happened, actually.
It's not an easy thing.
Yeah, that happened, actually.
That kind of an event.
That happened, actually, a couple of years ago. The Double A's and the Masters, when they still had the Calcutta. I had one of the players who ended up actually winning the Double A's. I had him in the Calcutta, and he had to finish it on Sunday afternoon because his team actually lost the finals of the A division.
Right, so, right. That's a real common occurrence because usually the better players are on a good team also.
Yep.
And they're in the finals or semifinals or quarterfinals of the singles events or scotch events. At the same time, they're playing a team. Sometimes they got three different matches to play on Sunday. Some players will end up like that.
Yeah. So the events that are going to be offered this year, the men's and women's, for the 9-ball, 10-ball, the 9-ball will be played for men's B and A division, and then the double A's and masters are 10-ball. The women's B is 9-ball, and then the women's masters and A players are 10-ball, and those are grouped together. The 8-ball events, that's for everything. So all the divisions for the women and all the divisions for the men, as well as there will also be team events, obviously. And there is a men's Scotch doubles 8-ball and a mixed Scotch doubles 8-ball, which are both on Wednesday. And then there are also the normal team events like the B division for men's, women's, all the good stuff. So it actually seems like they're keeping.
Do you have a partner for the Scotch?
I do. I'm playing with my uncle. We played last year. He took up the game kind of more seriously, I guess, in the recent years. So he's in the B division. So we played together last year, and actually for him basically only playing for 2 years, we ended up taking 9th through 12th, which is a pretty good finish. We had to go to almost the max number. We had to go to, I think, 5. A men's double or a men's A player and a men's master player would have had to go into 6. So we had to go to 5. But we were going to a higher number than two men's A players.
What are the restrictions for who can play with who?
A men's master cannot play with a men's double A, but that's it. So all the other options are available. And
a men's master cannot play with another men's master?
Yeah. So for a men's...
Or double A.
Yeah. So
The highest that master can play with is an A player.
Correct. Okay. So we had to give like a double A and an A player a game, which is really tough action. that's really tough action. But we ended up doing all right. We got 9 through 12. I was pretty happy with that. So yeah, I'll be playing with him again. And then, yeah, are you you playing in this?
Maybe I'll ask see if Jeremy's playing in it.
Well, there you go.
No.
But if you do play in the men's scotch, I don't think you can play in the 10-ball.
He might be a double A now, though. I'll have to ask.
Yeah, if you play in this one, I don't think you can play in the 10-ball. I don't think you can play in both events at the same time, which is kind of a bummer, but that's kind of how this works is, you got to get all these got to get all the events in, and you got to have, you know, the availability to play.
Oh, I couldn't play in the singles 10 ball then?
I don't think so. I think you can only play in one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a hard time counting past 8 anymore.
Yeah, it's tough how that works, huh? So we can wrap that up. If you're going to play in the WSBA and you haven't gotten your stuff in, make sure you get it in. Deadline's fast approaching.
You can stay right at the place the tournament's held.
You can, which is awesome. No driving, yeah. No drunk driving tickets or anything like that. That was always a struggle.
They have indoor parking, is that correct?
I don't know that. Maybe. I don't know yay or nay on that.
They got a ramp.
I know that.
And then they got a walkway, a causeway, and an indoor ramp right there.
Yes. So the next thing that we will move on to is actually the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, another sponsor to the podcast. And they have their Hall of Fame voting out right now. And if I'm not mistaken, I think a certain co-host of this show is on the ballot this year. Is that right?
You know what? I went to look at that the other day, and I forgot my password.
You forgot your password. Well,
yeah. So I'm going to have to call John.
Yeah, so if you like the podcast and you're a listener from Wisconsin, make sure you vote Rob. I got a second membership just so that I could vote for you twice. That's how dedicated I am to getting you in, Rob.
Oh, that's cute.
So as well as Rob on the ballot, Gene Albright is there, John Brennan, George Brunt, Rob Dobozinski, Jim Fitzpatrick, Julie Fitzpatrick, Steve Hayes, Mr. Rob Ovech, Claudio Perrone Sr., James McDermott, Peg Legman, and Pam Kelly. They're all on the ballot for this year. So if you're in Wisconsin and you don't have a membership to the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, what are you doing? Get over there. Support Wisconsin. Support John and Kyle and Greg and all that they're doing.
Is a membership? Is it like $10?
No, it's super cheap. Well, I mean, I say it's super cheap. I think it's super cheap. They offer 1, 3, and 5 year memberships, and the 1 year is $10, the 5 year is $40, and the 3 year is $25. So I went out of order there. So 1 year $10, 3 year $25, 5 year $40. I'm not very smart. It's out of order on the website, so I blame them.
Aren't you a mathematician?
Not a good one.
Okay.
Yeah. So we will remind everybody to get over there, and if you're not a member yet, go over there and do it, because what's a better organization than this? It's super fun, the banquet that they have every year, and it's a great cause, and they always give back money to the charities, to like local events, or for, you know, if there's a benefit tournament that goes on, they always donate money to it. If there's a junior that's going to some big tournament, they always donate money to it. They don't just take the profits and put it in their pockets. It's a completely nonprofit organization, so hard to find a better organization to support than this one, especially if you love the game of pool.
Yeah, especially if you're a pool player that lives in Wisconsin.
Yeah, of course. So we can move on from that. So two bits of information here. One, the Cue It Up store is now going to be expanded. We are partnering with Chris Santana, who is, again, another sponsor to the podcast. We're getting lots of highlighting in for our sponsors today. And he is with Fast and Loose Designs, and he is actually going to be taking on some of my, basically hosting them for free with a website that he works with through his company to basically bring new items to the store that we now can purchase if we choose to. So if you wanted more Cue It Up gear besides the t-shirts, we will now be offering hoodies, zip-up hoodies, long sleeve shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, patches, and hats. So if any of those sound good to you and you want to purchase some of them, I will be making that available, a link on my website very, very soon, within probably the next week, and all of those items will be available. Also, if you do not want to order them online and you would rather buy them in person, Rob, you were so excited to say this earlier. Would you like to give the announcement?
I forgot. What is it? What news am I giving?
Our booth for state.
We could have, and we're going to be giving away all kinds of stuff. And I'll tell you what, it'd be the booth from heaven if you're looking for pool advice.
I didn't know we were signing up for that, but okay.
I'm going to be there. And we're really full of that.
Yeah, we're full of opinions and knowledge. Not all of it's any good, but some of it is. Yeah, so we will have a booth at WSBA for the state pool tournament, and we will be – I will be there the entire time. Rob, you're deciding if you're going to be there the whole time. I think I'm going to talk you into it, though, so you'll be there the whole time too. And
I'll
we will
be
have
there for a while, yeah.
And we will have the T-shirts like normal for sale. We will also have all of these new items, hopefully, if we're able to get them all. So we will have, you know, coffee mugs and patches and the hoodies and all those, all the good stuff, some hats at the booth. And we will be selling them basically to support our podcast. So if you
Why don't we do this, Nate, at the booth? Why don't we have a recording at the booth?
Well, I'm actually going to do that. That's a genius idea, but I already came up with that first.
And then whoever comes up to the booth, we just interview them. Sit him down and interview him like the Gestapo would.
Yep. So this is actually my idea for that. We have had basically for the first, I guess we've been around for about 8 months now or so, and we've had filler music from my cousin's band this entire time. And it's fun. I like it. I mean, I like the music, so I mean, but other people might not like it. So what we're going to do is we are going to, instead of having that music as transition music, we are going to have, we'll probably still have some of the music, but what we're going to do as segment fillers is we're going to have pool stories. And at the booth that we're going to have at State, I'm going to have a recorder set up. And if you would like to come by and give your favorite pool hall story or your favorite gambling story, your favorite tournament story, or just what pool means to you personally or anything like that, that is going to be set up there. And you can swing by, and if we like what you have to say, we will actually add it to the podcasts to, I guess, get out some stories and some fun little tidbits that you have to offer to the wider world.
America's Funniest Home Videos without the video.
I guess, maybe. Oh. But that'll be available as well. So even if you don't want to get any cool queued up gear, you can swing over, and if you have a really, really cool story and you want it to be memorialized forever in podcast form, you can give us that story and we'll use it on the podcast if we like it. So that could be a fun thing. Who knows? So I guess that is all we really have to get cleared up in the beginning. It's been a long time since we've had a Wisconsin episode. Well, I guess we've never had one, but it's been a long time since we've covered Wisconsin pool. So there's lots of stuff to get cleared up in the beginning, and there's going to be lots of tournaments that we're going to talk about. So we will, I guess, jump right in and start with those now. That was, I think, you jumping in. Seemed like a you jumping in thing.
Did it?
I don't know. Seemed fine.
So yeah, it was supposed to be.
So we're not going to go all the way back to the last time we did Wisconsin, because that's just too much, and I don't think people really want to hear a lot of that. But we will cover what happened in December, and we will blow through some of the quicker ones and things that I just don't know a lot about because there's not really good documentation for it. But we can start with a 500 and under that happened. I guess it wasn't technically December, but it was just before December in November. So this was a 500 and under 8-ball that had actually 51 players. So it was a really good turnout. And this was held at the Mad Apple in Appleton. And this had Jim's Matter getting first place over Tyler Ermis. Third place goes to Jeff Jansen. Fourth place goes to Dustin Loss. Sixth goes to Trevor Balthazer. I don't know. I'm not really sure how to pronounce that. Balthazer. And Bob Shingen. So, actually, I don't think I actually recognize any of those names.
I have not heard of any of those players, but congratulations to them all.
Yeah, and first place.
May they continue to work their way up.
Yeah, and first place went for $1,000 between payouts in Calcutta. So, pretty good payday. Pretty good paydays for some 500 unders.
Basically beginner players.
Yeah.
You're out there, you make $1,000 as a beginner player? What is up with that?
Pretty good.
I'd have to say that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
it might almost make you want to not get any better.
That definitely seems to be a very logical conclusion that you could come to. We don't have those available too many. We don't have too many of those available as, you know, mid 600 level players between the two of us. But, you know, that's where the player base is. And if those players, you know, want to pool together and create their own tournaments, I guess there's nothing you and I can do to stop them. They're the ones that are showing up and drinking and, you know, creating bar tabs.
The host sites for getting that done for the beginning players.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool deal all in all.
Yep. So we can move on to that, and we will talk next about Nikki's birthday batch. And Nikki is a friend of mine, so we have to talk about her tournament on here. And this was Nikki Wera's 40th birthday, so happy belated birthday. Now, this was held at Shepherd's, and this had Jerry Jonkis getting first place over Vinny Schmidt. Third place goes to Ben Poppies. Fourth place goes to Doug Loewinger. And fifth, sixth goes to Jody Green and B. Lower. And this had almost 50 players. It had about 40, 46 players in it. So lots of tournaments. Lots of players in the last two tournaments. And this, again, I believe was a 500 and under, because I don't see any players in here over 500. So 500 and under players show up for tournaments, I guess. The next one...
It seems our pool situation is in an awkward place, but not a bad place. It's only awkward for certain numbers.
Yeah.
You know, numbers like you and I, actually. It's an awkward place because if we're in open tournaments, we're at the lower end of the open division, which is filled with monsters. And we're disqualified from playing with the, you know, much better mid-level players. We can't play with them.
Yeah, there's definitely an awkward Fargo between kind of like us, probably like 625 where the Beloit No Master stop and kind of like 660 where I am. It's I can certainly compete with 700 level players, but I can't do it over the course of, you know, if I have to play four straight 700s, the chances of me beating one of them, you know, they're probably 40%. Two of them, that's now we're getting closer to, I guess, 4 out of 25. And, you know, if I have to do that four times, the chances of me doing that are, what is it, 16 over 625. So about 5%. Not very good.
Not very good.
No. So, yeah, it's kind of an awkward position that we're in. But, you know, that is what it is, I guess. We can move on. There was a JTK Memorial Benefit Tournament, which was a two-person tournament, and this had 26 teams, so pretty good. And it was held at Brewster's Lanes. So this had Clayton Pemberton and David Anderson getting first place over Dave Hahn and David Nelson. Ryan Pearson and Terry Barrow get third place. And Mike Volk and Anthony Sadlin get fourth place. And then the last one for the 7th of December was Vibes 1000 and Below Scotch Tournament, which had John Rodriguez and Rome Harper getting first place. Bobby Johnson and Lamar Westbrook get second place. Matt Kitzman, shout out to Matt. He's a helper to the podcast, a huge helper to the podcast. So third place goes to Matt Kitzman and Josh Bordo. And fourth place goes to Tommy Lloyd and Robin Strahl. So those were all the events for the 7th of December. The next ones we'll talk about are the 14th of December, which had a bunch of quite a few pretty good tournaments. They had one big one at The Rock, which was a handicapped nine-ball tournament, winner break, and anybody can play. So each player had a ranking or had a number based off of their ranking, and they raced to that number. So there was 111 in here. Was there 111? There's two 11s in here, which would be semi-professional or top amateur. And those were Larry Neville and Tom McCluskey. And then there was several nines sprinkled in throughout. And actually a nine ended up winning it, which was Jeremy Fedkenauer. And he got first place over Jamie Caston. Duncan Kaufman, another nine, got third. Mike Wilbur, a seven, got fourth. And then Marshall Hill and Tom McCluskey get fifth, sixth. Marshall's a five, and Tom is an 11. So there's a pretty good sprinkling of players around there. The rankings were 4, 5, 7, 9, and 11. So the highest 4, I guess, got 17th through 24th. So 4s didn't seem to fare very well in this event. But there was a 9, 11, a 5, and a 7 all in the top 5. So this seems to be a pretty good ranking system as far as the tournament goes. It seems like you had to play pretty good all the way through to do well in it. They had almost,
that was at the Rock, you said?
Yeah, they had almost 60 players. I misspoke. They had 60 players in this event.
Wow.
Yeah, this definitely seems to be a pretty good event. They only have 8 tables there, so I bet they struggled a little bit. Oh, no, this was a 2-day event. That's right. This was a 2-day event, so they were able to do that.
Sure.
We wouldn't have been able to do this in one day, obviously, with only 8 tables, especially with the race being that high for some of the people. But this, unfortunately, I wanted to play in this so bad, but I had a final this day, so I wasn't able to.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, college sucks. So we'll move on from that. There was also the same weekend a handicap 10-ball tournament, which was held at the Sussex Bowl. And this had Chris Patterson getting first place over Pete Hurd. Scott Kugel gets third, and Caden Hunkins gets fourth place. And this, again, was a... looks like it's broken up from an elite, master, A player, and an open player. So a master wins it with Chris Patterson. Pete Hurd is an elite, I guess. Holy crap, he's a 717 these days. Wow, Pete Hurd is a monster.
Really?
Yeah, that is crazy. I mean, Pete Hurd is a phenomenal player, but whoa, his Fargo's getting high. He's one of the highest rated players in the country.
What's Chris's Fargo rating?
Chris is a 658. And then Scott Kugel sneaks in as an A. He's a 624, but there is no double A. I think it's just the A stands for advanced. So there's elite, master, advanced, and open. Master wins it, elite gets second, advanced gets third. No opens anywhere close. The closest eight open was 13th through 16th, so, and there was actually only 4 of them in the entire event, which is isn't that kind of weird? It's
yeah, it's not weird at all. It's the way things are now.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess open players or the lower quality players like to kind of stick to their own tournaments, it seems like.
Yeah.
But there's a couple that played in this, which is cool. So I don't know.
The best thing they can do is get in tournaments where they're not the best player.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to get better.
Yeah. If you don't, then you're fine doing whatever you're doing. But.
Yeah. So we can move on from that. Sammy Jr.'s 8-ball had an open-tiered tournament. And this had J.J. Bowman getting first place over Kenny Tepp. Al Gernster gets third, and Jerry McCrossen gets fourth. This only had about 12 players in it, so smaller tournament. But
yeah, I know Jerry.
Yeah.
From Rapids.
And so the big Rapids tournament. So that was all the tournaments for the 14th. So now we'll move on to the 21st of December. And this had the big tournament that we'll talk about. The biggest tournament that we'll talk about. This was the Beloit No Master. And these events always are just huge. They always cap it at 96. This didn't get to 96, but it looks like it got about 80 and some change. And you know, they're capped events. There's always a ton of money that's paid out at these. Usually first place goes between $3,000 and $4,000 between the tournaments and the Calcuttas. So this is really the biggest events that Wisconsin has to offer as far as payout on a regular basis. And so Gavin Tinkey gets first place over Patrick Martin. And I think Gavin has won this a couple times. I get that there's a cap on this, but I don't know. We don't need to go into this, but it seems like the Illinois people always end up winning this event. And I'm not really 100% sure as to why that's the case, but neither here nor there. Patrick Martin, good buddy of mine, gets second place. George Zavala gets third place. Brian Kierzynski gets fourth place. Fifth, sixth goes to Mike Sahalka and Louis Caron. And then seventh, eighth goes to Maria Wana and Jerry Jameson. So that was those events were always fun. I always got my teeth kicked in whenever I played in those, even when the No Masters were 649 Fargo and under. I, for whatever reason, I just cannot play on those Beloit tables. They play so much different than the tables I'm used to for diamonds. I always just got beat up in those tournaments.
Oh, different how?
Well, they're the red labels, but they're I think Dave did some work to them to make them play a little closer to Blue Labels. And I think he just messed with the rails, raised them up a little bit. So the big difference between the Blue Labels and the Red Labels is the height of the rails. And I think he made them basically play like Blue Labels. But I just never get comfortable on those tables. They're just so tough. The speeds are different.
So the rails are bouncy?
Yeah, yeah. They're bouncy and they play fast.
Springy?
And, yeah, they play just so much different than the rocks. And I never go down there and practice on them, which is probably what I should have done. But I just never did that. And, yeah, I always got beat up in those tournaments. And now I'm not allowed in them anymore, which is a bummer. Because
yeah,
I would like to be able to play in them again. But that's how it goes. So the other event that happened that week was at Tom's Foolery. There was an 8-ball tournament, and this only had 16 players in it. But Matt Diber gets first place over Hua Li. Ong Vang gets third place, and then KP Yang gets fourth place. So we can move on from that. So I guess this last one are going to be all the tournaments from this weekend. All of these events were from this past weekend. So we will start with a 515 under 10 ball that was held at the ballroom in Portage. And this had Kevin Kistick getting first place over Ed Allsworth, with Bao Li getting third place, and Jesse McDermott getting fourth place. There was also a 475 and under at the ballroom the same day, which had David Lee Garcia getting first place over Eric Jackson, Mike Taylor getting third place, and Susan Bratcher getting fourth. There was a 1099 and under two-man at Shepherd's, which had Bonnie Hunkins and Johnny Rodriguez getting first place, Mario Madrid and Michael Lemire getting second, Mike Embiew and Anton Washington getting third place. And fourth place going to Kurt Schroeder and Angel Acevedo.
You know, I'm surprised, and that was a partners tournament?
It was.
I'm very surprised that there isn't more mixed partners tournaments. I don't know how the ladies Fargo is set up compared to the men's.
But it's all the
same
system.
I do know how a lot of the ladies play, and a lady who was ranked a 520 or five, you know, in that area, 530. If you can name a few, I will probably know them. That's a fairly high ranking.
Well, I think Bonnie Hunkins is, and she won this.
And I've played with Bonnie before, and I know how good she is. And what surprises me is that there isn't more guys out there looking for ladies who are ranked, you know, in the lower 500s, who are master players.
Yeah. Bonnie is actually a 542, but I mean...
540? Okay, but still, I would put Bonnie up against any 560.
Bonnie plays good.
Men's player in the state. I'll put some money on her. And because I know how talented she is. And I noticed that, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, when I was browsing over these numbers for people, and I'm going down the list, and I'm getting, these are like, if you put everybody together, men and women, and you go down the list, and pretty soon you'll get to you get to Pam. She's, you know, she's a little higher. She might be in the 600s even.
Yep, she is.
But then after that, you got to go down a ways.
No, Maria's there too.
Maria's better too. Yeah, but okay, after that too, you got to go down a ways before you really. You get some really good women players who their numbers are pretty low. So, I mean, if I'm just surprised that there isn't more guys out there asking these lady players to play in these partners tournaments with them, just because their skill is way higher than what their number is, from what I see on a lot of them. And that may be even what's Maria's number? Is she in the 600s too?
Maria's a 603, and Maria's playing better than a 603 right now too. Because
would you say that both of these women are over 650 in all actuality? Probably.
I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but Maria's playing 620 to 630 speed pretty comfortably right now. She's playing really good. Yeah. So I could echo that. I think that and Johnny and Bonnie have some chemistry since they play together every year for the Scotch at WSBA too, and. I think they've won it a couple years. I know they won it last year. They've won it a couple years, though. So they clearly play very well together. And
Yeah.
So I guess we can move on from that. Okay, well, we just have a couple more tournaments to get through. So we will move on to the one that I was actually at. And this was just a brutal tournament. I mean, as far as the format of it, you either win or, I mean, there is no shooting into a good stroke in this tournament. It was, you played well from the beginning or you were done. So, and I'll explain a little bit more on that in the beginning, but Matt Daniels gets first place over Steve Box. Dalton Box gets third place, and Danny Henning gets fourth place. So this was a tournament format that had, so if you're 600 or above, you raced to 4 on the winners and 3 on the one loss side. If you were a 500 to 600 level player, you raced to 3 and 2, 3 on the winners, 2 on the losers. And if you were below 400, you raced to 2 on the winners and 1 on the one loss side. So I actually got knocked out by a under 400 level player who won the first game, and I lost 1-0, which is a really, really brutal kind of format, I guess. You can't lose a single game. And I actually lost because Danny Toothman, who ended up getting fourth place, I guess Danny Henning now, because she just got married. Yeah, she two-rail kick comboed a ball in with perfect positioning, and I lost. You know, what can you do?
Who did she marry? Chris?
Sean Henning. So, yeah. I did have a situation come up with this particular tournament, which was, we'd kind of talked about this before, and I was the highest rated player at this tournament, and I was playing actually very well. I won the first two matches 4-0, 4-0, and then I ended up losing in my third match, but I actually ran 6 tables in the first two matches, 6 of my 8 tables, all of my breaks, except for one, which I broke dry on. And the bar was watching me, and they were kind of following me around to all of my matches. And they weren't following me around to watch. They were actually following me around to cheer against me, which is kind of interesting. It's the first time I've ever had that happen in a small town where, like, everybody wanted to watch me play, but they wanted to watch me play because they wanted to watch me lose. And every time something bad would happen, they would cheer. And they would, like, cheer on my opponent. And every time I did something right, they kind of just, you know, aww.
They moaned, huh?
Yeah, they were trying to...
They moaned when you won.
Yeah, they wanted to watch me lose. Like, that, as like, a sport. I've never had that happen before. It was interesting, to say the least. And at one point in time, I'm even like, what did I do? There was a girl sitting literally right next to me, 2 feet away from me while I was playing this match. And she literally started cheering when the person broke and made a ball. And I kind of turned around and the entire room is like staring at me and the table, or at least the people that were following me around, following the match around. And they're like, and I looked at them, I'm like, what did I do to make all of you hate me so much? Kind of as a joke, but in actual seriousness too. And they're like, this girl who's sitting right next to me, she's like, it's not that we hate you. It's just that we don't want to see you win. We want to see somebody else have a chance. And I'm just like, I just kind of turned around at that point because, I mean, there's nothing to talk about at that point. But it was interesting to see that just because I had the highest Fargo that everybody wanted me to lose for sport. Have you ever had that happen to you, Rob?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But for you, Nate, it could possibly be what they're used to seeing is not a quality pool playing, just pool playing. And there's a way that top players, that's like over 600, say, all the way up to as far as you want to go, there's a way they walk around the table. There's a way they handle themselves at the table. There's a way they pick up the chalk. There's a way they chalk up. There's a way they stand. There's a way they hold their posture at the table and around the table. There's an air that comes with being a pretty darn good pool player, just like with any other sport. And to a lot of folks out there who don't fall into that category, they're jealous of that. And they're weary of that. They're a little maybe not used to that kind of thing. And it can come off as, I think it's more confidence. And there's people that just want those kind of folks to lose. They don't care about watching how good they play and learning something from their play. Just want them to lose, like you. I just wanted you to lose. And it could be not because they don't like you, but because they want somebody else to win.
Yeah, and that's...
I do that with the Green Bay Packers and the Vikings.
Yeah, that's kind of...
I just... If the first thing I ask my wife if the Packers lose is, did the Vikings lose?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's because if they lose, then I don't feel so bad for the Packers.
And you know, yeah, that's kind of I've definitely been cheered against before, and it's usually because, like, the person that I'm playing against, you know, they have a personal crowd or something like that. They're a local favorite, they're a fan favorite, they're something like that. But I've never had it where, like...
That happens. In some of the big national tournaments, you'll see whole families accompanying players.
Yeah, because they're cheering on a person.
And there'll be uncle, an aunt, and sister, and cousin, and dad, and his best friend. And there's like 15 people at the table watching your opponent trying to beat you.
But I've never had it where like the crowd literally follows me just to cheer against me, like for the sport of it. It was a very interesting experience.
That is unique.
Yeah.
That is,
And it was just because I was the highest Fargo'd player that was there. They just wanted to watch the best player, quote unquote, lose. And it was interesting.
Yeah.
It was a
very
interesting
experience.
Yeah, they
couldn't wait for something bad to happen to you in the game because that would make them so happy.
Yes. Yeah, that was weird. Well,
That
was I never felt more unpopular in my life than I did in those matches. But my sadness was.
I used to get a lot of that when I was back in my drinking days.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. But of course, I deserved it then back then.
So I guess we can move on from that. There's just a couple more events that we'll blow through real quickly. There was a Corey Janquet benefit tournament, which had Troy Smits getting first place over Chris Gauntness, and I probably pronounced that wrong. He's a listener to the podcast, so I should probably get that right. But
he does post on Facebook quite a bit too, and I wish I knew how to pronounce his name.
I think it's Gauntness.
Tennis?
Maybe I'm not. He is a listener to the podcast, and I think so. I should get his name right, but sorry, Chris. Third place goes to Corey Janquet. Fourth place goes to Paul Barth. So that is that tournament. We will go on to the next one, which was the Wanmundi House Holiday Party. And this had a ton of players in it. It looks to be about 60 players almost.
Gee whiz.
Yeah, so first place goes to...
Where is that? Wanmundi.
So this was in Wanmundi House Resort. I don't exactly know where that is. Cochrane, Wisconsin. Mean anything to you?
I've never been there.
According to this, it looks to be about 45 minutes south of Eau Claire. So, and about maybe an hour north of...
Black River Falls.
Yep, it's
that should be by Black River Falls.
Yeah, it's west of there for looks to be about 45 minutes, so it's almost on the border. But this had a bunch of players in it. Brian Burdick gets first place. Eric Madsen gets second. Harley Clemish gets third. Ray Poff gets fourth, and fifth, sixth goes to Corey Pittis and Greg Korpel. I guess looking through this list, I actually only recognize a few of the names, so. I'm guessing that this was some sort of handicap event, but...
Yeah, probably.
Jeff Glaza was there. He's a sponsor to the podcast. Good to see
his
name.
Yeah, what's his rating? Jeff's rating?
I think he's right around just shy of 600, I think. So then the last one that we will talk about is the fourth annual Flip It tournament, which was held at Tom and Joe's. And this had Joe Olson getting first place over Harley Olson and Jesse Hall getting third place with Rick Elm getting fourth. So those were all of the tournaments that we will talk about. That went a long time, but we had a month's worth of tournaments. So hopefully
we could mention the Corral 52 up north of Wausau. That was a local 32-man tournament. They had 31 players, and Matt Strong won that. That was worth $1,250, I think, with the Calcutta money for first place in that tournament.
Well, that's a pretty good event.
It was just a race of three, too, I think. It was a short race. Tim Clark got second, I believe.
Well, good for Tim. Tim's a big listener to the podcast, and he actually shares almost every single episode that we do, so he's like a super fan on top of being a fan. So thank you, Tim, for all of the sharing that you do with the podcast. It really helps out. And if anybody else wants to, feel free. But so we'll give a shout-out to those two as well, and then we can move on to what's coming up. Wisconsin's upcoming events will be brought to you by Jeff Glaza and CBD for Life Global. Several years ago, Jeff challenged himself to be the best pool player he could be. He quickly learned three things. It was going to take a lot more work than he thought, the game was mostly mental, and that he did not play well enough in pain and or being in an unhealthy state of mind. For over 20 years, Jeff has been interested in a more natural approach to health. One day, a couple years ago, while doing research, he discovered CBD as a natural way to reduce the effects of anxiety. After taking CBD regularly, he began to experience life-changing results not only with less anxiety, but also less muscle and joint pain, and the bonus of a more restful sleep. CBD is now a major part of his life and goals of being as healthy as possible and continuing to enjoy and excel at the game. Jeff would like to invite you to share in the amazing benefits of CBD and find out how it could benefit your life and game as well. He invites you to text him anytime at 715-887-2550 or follow the link on my website and you will find over 70 high-quality products delivered to your door that all come with an empty bottle, 60-day money-back guarantee. So we will cover the events coming up for the next 2 weeks, I guess, because that'll probably maybe be the next time we do another one of these episodes. Probably not before then, because we kind of talk about this. There's just not enough going on in Wisconsin to do one every week. So when there's enough that happens, I guess we'll come back on and talk. But we'll start with January 4th tournaments. And this is so the first one we'll talk about is a three-person race to four double elimination. And $15 per person, $45 a team. This is at Bad Habits Rowdy's Bar. So it looks to be a third an annual event. Again, all of these tournaments can be found on the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame. So if you wanted more information on any of these, just head over to there and go to the tournaments tab and all of them will be there. Another one for the fourth is a 12-25 and under Scotch doubles race to 7-6 and 10 ball at the Mad Apple in Appleton. That's a pretty high cap. So lots of different teams that can be made out of that. Should be a,
what's that number?
12-25. So an average of 6-12.5, pretty high number. Definitely incorporates a lot of different players. Then another tournament on the 4th is a 6-person Scotch doubles. This looks like a really really goofy formatted tournament, but it looks like it'd be a fun one. Wisconsin Rapids downtown, so I guess this is between a bunch of different bars. And there are teams of six people.
They're right next door to each other, though, most of them.
Teams of six within a block. Consisting of three men and three women. Two masters per team.
It is fun.
You've played in this before.
Yeah, all those team tournaments in Rapids are fun that they have down there downtown. Yeah. They're all kind of cool. There's no hate in the Rapids. It's all love of the game. That's what I've noticed.
Yeah. So there's another tournament at Stratford Citywide. 3-person Scotch, $30 entry fee, so $10 a person. Not a ton of money in this one, but it looks to be like a kind of a local city bar tournament. So if you're playing this, you're probably not playing in it for the money. So that one's...
Right.
Yeah, that one's there. Knuckleheads Bar and Grill has an 8-ball team tournament, 3-person, 1 master per team, 16-team limit, $100 added at 16 teams. And I've actually played in this one before. It's a really good event. It fills every year, usually several months in advance. It's filled again now. So they have 4 tables, 2 valleys, and 2 diamonds. This is always a fun tournament. I went to it last. Actually, I go to it every year, even if I can play in it or not, usually. It's just a pretty fun tournament. Small little town with some good tables and some good food. So I might end up going to there again. Who knows? So those are all the events for the 4th. We can move on to the 11th now. And the first one I'm guessing you want to talk about because it is at the Top Hat Tavern.
Yes, it is. Superior, Wisconsin. That's the Twin Ports, Duluth, Minnesota, and Superior, Wisconsin. The Top Hat Tavern. Scott V., Mr. Onion, Salesman of the Century, is presenting the 5th annual Big Guns 8-ball tournament. And he is adding $1,000 to the tournament himself. So it's a $100 entry fee. They take 32 players. It's Saturday and Sunday, January 11th and 12th. Plenty of places to stay in Superior. plenty of motels and hotels. It opens at 11 o'clock at the Top Hat. Calcutta's at 11:30, and the tournament starts at noon. Double elimination, race to seven. And this is winner breaks, eight ball, on a valley table. Winner breaks, race to seven. Tournament pays down eight places. The Calcutta pays down four. And last year's winner walked away with somewhere in the neighborhoods of $3,000 with the first place money and the Calcutta. First place, I think, is around $1,500.
Yeah, it's advertised as $1,500.
And this is an open tournament. This is, I don't know if there's any restrictions for this tournament.
There are not.
So, it's up in the far corner of the state of Wisconsin. It's almost closer for people from Minnesota to come and play to this tournament than it is in Wisconsin to come and play, especially if you live in the southern part of the state.
Yeah, and I know that we are both thinking about playing in this, actually.
I am thinking about it. I got to see how my neck and back is going to react to. I can actually take in the neighborhood of 20 consecutive shots on the billiard table now, and not have any side effects, pain type related side effects up in my neck and back. And that's quite a bit. I mean, going from not being able to even shoot one shot to being able to shoot 20 in a row. Yeah. That doesn't mean I'm running 20 billiards in a row, though.
Yeah, that'd be pretty impressive.
That would be pretty impressive.
So, that event is going to be available if anybody wants to play in it.
That's the 11th and 12th.
Yes, and we're both thinking about playing in it as well. There is a 555 and under high roller at Shepherd's, and this is a race to 7 and 6, $115 entry fee. 500 added with 48 players. So should be some pretty good money in that one if you're able to get over to that. And those are all the events, I guess, that for the next two weekends. So I guess we will wrap it up there and we can move on to the end of the podcast. So our discussion topic this week, and we're already going very long, I realize that, and you know, we'll do one of these every 2 weeks, and I guess if you're going to listen to the podcast and you want Wisconsin stuff, seems like this shouldn't be a problem. If it is, reach out and we'll make them shorter. But I mean, I don't know. I don't see why more content would be a bad thing. But I don't know. What do I know? So the discussion topic that we'll talk about this week, Rob, and this was like blew up on Facebook, I guess. There was a local tournament at Union Grove, and it turned out that there were two Wisconsin players that were playing together, and one was a master and one was a WSBA A player. And they thought that because they were a master and an A player that they would go to four. Well, it turns out that the tournament director had everything set up to be Fargo only. So 575 and above would be AA, 575 and below would be an A player. There was a miscommunication that happened, and the players actually won the hill and then were kicked out of the pool tournament for basically, quote-unquote, lying about their ratings. And I put on my reporter's hat and talked to both sides and tried to string together what actually happened. And this is kind of what I came up with, I think. There was communications that happened before that verified that they would be a five, going to five, racing to five, that is. The day of the tournament, a question was asked to one of the players, according to the tournament director, is this player below 575? To which they responded, they are below 575. The tournament director never verified that. They just went off of the word. And then later on in the tournament, I guess after them winning the hill, they decided that it was going to be verified. They were not below 575. And then they forfeited them out of the pool tournament because of that, because of the lie that was happened. Obviously, the two players were extremely enraged. They went to Facebook. They kind of put the tournament director and the tournament on blast. And that was kind of what happened, was there was a miscommunication, whether or not it was on purpose or not. It's hard to really get intent, without actually being there and hearing the conversation. But, well, I guess first off, giving all that information, Rob, would you have removed them from the pool tournament at that point? And it wasn't, I should say this, there was a Calcutta for it too. So it wasn't just the entry fee that they were losing. They were losing their half of the Calcutta or their whole of the Calcutta. I don't know if they have had a half or whole, but would you have removed them from the event for lying?
I probably would have, but I would have managed their Calcutta entry fee and whoever bought half of them a little different. I believe their entry fee I would have kept, but their Calcutta money I might have returned to the person that bought them, unless they bought themselves. And then I maybe return 90% of it, keep 10% for distraction purposes or something like that.
Yeah, this is kind of a tough one because
I don't think I just would have, you know, whatever they, I mean, if they paid like $300 or $400 for their Calcutta, then it's, or somebody else did. Now you're, you know, and you're keeping that person's money too. You know, that you have to work that out a little differently, I think. That's what, Calcutta does pose problems. We know that.
Definitely. Yep, definitely.
There are things, crises arise, conflicts of interest arise. You know, there's all kinds of things that Calcutta can cause that can disturb certain individuals that their money's involved in this. So, you know, once money's involved, it gets a little sticky sometimes, Nate.
Yeah. So I guess my opinion on this, One, and I actually talked to the tournament director himself, and he said he's a little bit newer to running events. And my outlook on all this is going to start right there. The tournament director was newer. You can't necessarily expect him to get everything perfect all the time. This was definitely a mistake that he made on his part, in my opinion, of not checking the Fargo rate immediately and relying on the word of the player saying that he was below a 575, which is the justification that he had for making them a 4 instead of a 5 in this tournament.
Right, but he's not really below 575, right?
No, he is not. The player is a 585.
So he's 10 points over that. So.
Yes, and the tournament director did actually send me text message proof saying that not the player who was 585, but the other player knew that they were going to be playing at a... The player admitted basically via text message, which I got, that the player was above 575 until the day of. And at that point in time, the tournament director asked him, which this is one thing that gets a little weird for me, is that the text message happened, and then the tournament director still asked him the day of, which the tournament director, according to the text message that he sent me, said that he knew that the player was over 585. So they should have never been allowed into the tournament at a 4 to begin with. That is on the tournament director. That was a mistake that the tournament director made. They should have did their due diligence. You can't necessarily trust that players are always going to be honest and truthful with things. With that being said, I'm taking that all from the viewpoint that the question was asked and the answer to whether or not he was below 575 was yes. Without actually being there...
Which wasn't true.
Well, I don't know, because without actually being there or having some sort of like audio recording of it, I don't know. All I know that the player who's not in question, the other player on the team, was asked point blank, is this player below 575? And their response was yes. I've heard that from a couple of different sources, so I must believe that that's true. That has been independently verified. So the master player on the team told the tournament director that the player was under 575. So
I'll give this tournament director, even though he's new, I'll give him credit because he made a decision.
That's a very tough decision to make, too.
And extremely tough. But what it's going to do, it's going to wake people up. He goes, okay, the next time we go to a tournament, and it's a tournament at this place, and this is the fellow who's running it, You better really get all your shit straight.
Bingo.
Before you sign up.
You got to do your due diligence.
All your I's have got to be dotted and your T's are crossed before you sign up, because this is what's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
So if you err on the side of weakness, if you're a tournament director, that comes back to haunt you. It always comes back to haunt you, because then the following years, whenever it is, however many years it is, well, back in, you know, '06 or whatever, this is the way that I handled that time, and blah 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 blah. So you open yourself up for that if you take a weak stance as a tournament director.
Correct.
Take a strong stance.
Correct.
Whatever way it is, just make it be strong.
Yeah, so I guess kind of picking up where I left off, the tournament director, I think the tournament director was a little new, and he hadn't seen maybe what can happen in a pool tournament. And I think the other player, assuming that that the lie was made, they full well knew it, and they took advantage of the situation. They took advantage of a tournament director kind of being a little bit new in the tournament world, maybe. And you know, that seems to be my takeaway from this, is the tournament director made a mistake by not doing his due diligence, and that was taken advantage of by this player. From the three different people that I talked to, actually the four different people that I talked to, including the player himself, to get his side of the story. Yeah, even the player who was in question as to whether or not he was 575 above or below, even he said in the discussion that he did not know what his partner had said as far as the whether or not he was below or above 575. So it all things kind of point to the other player saying that he may have been a below 575, which I guess was the catalyst for all of this. So given all of that, if that was actually said, and I've kind of taken that as faith at that point, that that was said, that he was below 575, even though he was not, I could definitely see the justification for kicking him out of the tournament. I still don't think I would have as a tournament director. I just don't think that you can undo all of that. But once it was found out that the Fargo was above 575, immediately on the spot, they would have went up to the correct number. I don't know exactly when at the point in this tournament that happened. I don't think I kick them out of the tournament, but I do put them immediately. And in fact, I would even go back one match. And if they, let's say that the match was a race to four and they won 4-3, I make them go back and play another game. If I wouldn't go back any further than that. I think that you can complete the final match with this new race, and then from there on out, they would be going to the same number, and then I would be putting a warning on, you know, both of those players that if this happens again, you know, they're out of the tournament for life. That's I think the way that I would have handled this.
That's okay, except for those three teams that they played that maybe would have won.
Correct.
Along the way.
Yes,
if
absolutely.
Their number would have been higher.
Correct.
Because you don't know.
Yes, and
they only went to four,
yeah.
So they should have gone to five. So now all those teams that lost 4-3 are going, oh, man, now what do we do? You know, we just spent $200 a piece in this tournament today, and we got nothing out of it.
Correct, and that gets really, really hard.
And a bogus win on the other, on the, you know, the other. So that really, you open up another can of worms when you do that.
You do, I agree.
You know, when you let them keep playing and not penalize them, because all those teams they won got penalized for telling the truth.
Correct. Yeah,
it's
a very difficult situation.
And you can't take it back. You can't go back. You can't say, okay, let's do all these matches over. You can't do that in a tournament. Never get over.
And this is where the reason that I would have fallen on that side of things was because the player in question, by all standards, everybody that I've talked to said that that player had nothing to do with the actual decision that was made. He was not aware that his number was even in question, and that came from both him as the player in question, the tournament director, and two other independent people who had firsthand knowledge of what happened. So,
that's unusual, that would happen that way. But
well, that was verified by all parties involved, as well as two individual "quote unquote" neutral parties. So,
I have a problem with that.
I guess by kicking them out of the tournament, you are then, somebody's getting punished no matter what. It's either the person who is in question.
It's got to be them getting punished. It's got to be.
Yes.
If you're not aware you're breaking the law, doesn't change what the law is or that you broke it. That's what a cop's going to say to you. Oh, you didn't know the speed limit was 45. Okay. Well,
yes.
That's too bad. You were going 60.
Yeah, there's
here's your ticket.
And I can definitely see that. And that, you put me in a position where, I mean, I can't justify my decision necessarily. I think you're actually right there. But I still think as a tournament director, if I was in this situation, I would have made them go back and finish the match that they had most previously won. Meaning they had to go to their highest number.
Like I said.
And then
I
would
one of the teams that lost.
From there on out, they were going to their actual number. That would
right.
I think that's the decision I would have made. But I could definitely see. In fact, I think it's probably more fair to actually kick them out of the tournament. So,
well, it's going to make a difference down the road in the future for this guy if he wants to run more tournaments.
Yeah, and
it's going to help him.
And one of the reasons that we decided to talk about
this. The only people that aren't going to like it, of course, are Dan and Blake. They're not going to like that.
Yeah, the two players, yeah. So, and that was one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this is to, I don't know how many tournament directors actually listen to this. I know Natasha used to. I don't think she does anymore. I know Mike Teasy did. I still think he does, but I don't know if he does or not. I'm hoping that the tournament directors are able to learn from this to kind of just do your due diligence.
I wouldn't.
Don't trust pool players to do the right thing.
Dean probably listens to these, and he runs tournaments for a living.
Yeah, but Dean does everything. Dean's a professional. I mean, Dean is so good at running tournaments that he knows everything that there is to know. He's not going to learn anything from this. He already knows. These lessons have been learned by him.
Oh no, but
years
I'm saying
ago.
He might listen to the podcast.
Oh yeah, yeah, maybe
not necessarily to learn anything, but just for kicks.
Yeah, maybe. I'm hoping that as a tournament director that this is a lesson learned for everybody, and
it's a thankless job. Unless you're
definitely.
Doing it for a living, like
John
Stitch and Dean Ressler, you're running tournaments for a living. That's another story. Otherwise, no, it's thankless. You somebody gets angry every single tournament.
Correct.
And they take that anger out of a tournament director, and stupid stuff happens every single tournament.
Yep, correct.
And when stupid stuff happens, the tournament director gets blamed.
Yep. Nope. I agree.
How could you let that happen? Why didn't you know that? Why didn't you do this?
Yep.
You get bombarded with that, and then you work your butt off, don't make probably anything, you're just doing it out of your love for the game and pool and everything else.
Yep.
And there you go. You go home in tears.
Yeah.
And
yep.
You've tried everything you could to make a tournament run real good.
Yeah. So we can wrap it up there. We probably pounded that horse enough. Well, so we can wrap this up with, we can use a couple tips. We will keep the tidbits to the other podcast, I think, unless you want
tidbits,
to do...
Tidbits, yeah, okay, for the next podcast, yeah.
Which we'll be recording right
tips,
after this.
The tips, I'm going to go back to eyes, everybody. I just read something that Gino wrote about his perfect aim, and it is just so true. It's just so true. And I would take every lesson or learn everything I could about different ways to look at and line up a shot, because there are. There's different things you can do it when you look at that shot from a distance, not right over the top of it, but from a distance. I'd look into that. Perfect aim and CTE, both of those.
Yeah, you can never learn enough about the game, that's for sure. My tip is going to be completely independent from getting better at the game. And with this tournament director talk that we've had, my tip is going to be take care of the tournament directors that you like. There's a few of them out there in Wisconsin that are just fantastic for the game of pool. They take their greens fees, they add it right back into the pool tournament, and nothing's lost. If you really like your tournament directors, and they're doing a lot of good things for the pool tournaments and the greater game of pool in general in your area, take care of them. Buy them a Christmas present, buy them a drink at the bar or something if you really like your tournament directors and you want them to stick around, it's like you said, it's a thankless job, and a lot of them are doing it just for the love of the game. Keep their love of the game strong. Buy them a drink and do whatever they need to do. That seems a little drastic, but hey, if you really, really like your tournament director, try that. I don't know.
That was for the people from Germany and Norway.
Yeah, right. If they've made it to
our
this point.
Our listeners in Germany and
if
Norway.
They've made it to this point, yeah.
Our special listeners.
Yeah. So I guess, Rob, this has been a really long episode. We can wrap it up here. We are going to be doing another podcast right after this one for the rest of the national stuff. So you'll get two podcasts in your feed and then a third one that I will be making a very, very important and awesome announcement. So make sure you look out for that one too. It's going to be a very short one. It's just going to be basically giving some information. So you should have three podcasts in your feed coming up very soon. But Rob, I guess we will check off for now and start up the other podcast, huh?
Adios, everybody.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Q Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.